On an evening in early December 2018, the young CEO of a cryptocurrency exchange reportedly dies while on his honeymoon in India. This death is not announced to customers for another month. And when they're told Gerald Cotton is the only person to hold the passwords to their funds, conspiracy theories grow, leaving some to wonder, could Gerald Cotton still be alive?
Honeymoon, moving the body, all the missing money. It was like, but what happened?
A Death in Cryptoland. Available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Rosemary Barton.
And I'm El Amin Abdul Mahmoud.
And this is Party Lines.
Scientists who advise the government have offered some confusing information about whether you should take one vaccine that's preferred over another. I think a lot of people are hearing this at the same time that they hear the Prime Minister say over and over again that the best vaccine is the first one you're offered. I want to talk about if the messaging around vaccines is getting confusing.
Mm-hmm. I want to check in on Alberta because Alberta now has the highest active case rate compared to any other province or U.S. state per capita. Premier Jason Kenney has announced some new restrictions for the province, which follows criticism from all sides that he waited too long, and criticism from other people who say he just should have waited a little longer. They're against further restrictions. So how bad is it in Alberta, and are they doing enough to get out of this?
That's a big mess. Let's get into it.
Okay.
So I want to start with what I think has been one of the clearest and simplest messages of the pandemic, and it's like this message that Prime Minister Trudeau has said about a million times, and it's the single line. It's the single line that the best vaccine is the first one that is offered to you. And he said it when vaccines started arriving in this country. He said it while some vaccine companies like had trouble keeping up with their supply. He said it as all of these like variants kind of took over in different parts of the country. And I kind of feel at this point he says it in his sleep. And it's like, it's so simple, and I think its simplicity has been key for why it's been so effective, because what could be simpler? Like, they give you an appointment, and you take it. And I wanted to start there, because that really clear, effective message got a little muddled this week, but not by the Prime Minister himself. The National Advisory Committee on Immunization, that's NACI, they are an external, independent committee of experts. Their job is to give non-Biden guidance, or let's say suggestions on how to deploy vaccines. They said this week that the mRNA-based vaccines, like the Pfizer and the Moderna, are preferred, that was a quote, over the viral vector vaccines, aka AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson. And Rosie, it is your job and mine to like keep up with this stuff. It is our job to know exactly who NACI is and what they do and how they're different than Health Canada and how their job is to make recommendations, but not necessarily, you know, ones that everyone's going to follow. It is frankly beyond me how people who are just stressed out trying to like spend 90 minutes booking a vaccine appointment, how they're supposed to like navigate this stuff. So I just wanted to start there.
Yeah, it's a good place to start because I think a lot of people this week felt confused, I think rightly so, and then felt like, hey, I feel like I would have liked that information before I got any vaccine, or this information is coming to me too late. I think fundamentally what NACI was telling people this week, well, first of all, it's not the first time they've said it. They had said it before as well when they lowered the age to allow for younger people to use AstraZeneca. What they're responding to, like in a very purely scientific medical assessment of vaccines, is that those vector vaccines, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, which, to be fair, has not even been distributed in the country yet, so nobody's even getting it, have a 1 in 100,000 risk of blood clots. And that risk has increased slightly from the last time that they reported, at which point it was 1 in 250,000 risk. This happens to be on a day where we just found out that a over 60-year-old in New Brunswick has passed away from a blood clot. And another incident has happened in Alberta, too. But it remains that it's extremely, extremely rare, right? That is true. But For NACI, as a group of independent doctors and scientists, they call that a safety signal or a safety flag. And the minute that there is one, regardless of how rare, they have to factor that into sort of their view of which vaccine is best. So the message was definitely more complicated than what the prime minister has been saying, right? Yes. It was a little bit more, if you can get the mRNA, get it. If you can't get it, or you're in a community where there's a lot of spread, then get whichever one is offered to you. But I don't know how a regular person is supposed to sort through and sift through all that information to make their own decision.
Yeah, exactly that. And you know, I love the way that people in my life talk about political communication, because it's like it's often represented as like this dark art, you know, this field that specializes in like, I don't know, political spin or something, when the reality is actually much more mundane. Like, it's about having to get something right, because at all times there are millions of people listening. And if you're not precise, there's going to be a million and one interpretations of the thing that you just said. And in a deadly pandemic, that is not good. So Our good pal Aaron Weary had a good tweet this week where he pointed out that NACI, which has been around for so long, they've been doing their work kind of quietly advising governments for 56 years. It's not exactly the most prepared agency or body for taking center stage like this. And to be honest, it's not like they played a large role in pandemic communications up until recently. Like, I remember maybe two significant points made by NACI. The first one was that there was that recommendation to vaccinate only up to a certain age with AstraZeneca. And I remember Quebec very politely said, no, thank you. Like, thanks for the recommendation, but we're not going to follow that. And the other one was about the length of the time between doses. NACI came out to say it's safe to stretch between dose one and dose two to 4 months. And I think some folks have kind of maybe accused the Liberals of hiding behind NACI's cover for not getting enough vaccine supply earlier on. But I'm getting to a point, I promise. And the point is, the point is this. If Health Canada gives the regulatory approval, and then the provinces have to decide how to act, and NACI is this sort of scientific authority middle ground, do we need them to be publicly facing at all? Mm-hmm. Like, do we need to hear from them publicly? Or is listening to them like this function of a particularly unique pandemic political communication setup where governments are now relying on NACI to lend them authority whenever they feel like it? Because as our producer Emma pushed me on this during our editorial meeting, like, she was like, well, what do you want them to do? Like, not say it? Not say that there's a preferred vaccine? Like, however minimal the calculus of risk, these people are the people who only deal in the realities of the science in front of them and clearly have no sensitivity to the absolute chaos they could launch. I mean, that interview that went viral was an interview with CTV where someone from NACI talked about how, you know, maybe she wouldn't give the AstraZeneca vaccine to her sister. And they're focusing only on the science part. And like, for clarity's sake, they should probably let the people who do the work of translating science to the public do that work, because it is an entirely different skill set.
Clearly. Yes. And I mean, I think a couple things. If a vaccine is available in this country, it's because Health Canada, who is the regulator of drugs, has said it is safe and it is effective.
Yes.
That is sort of like baseline knowledge, right? And NACI can have opinions and make recommendations, and the provinces can take them or not. But you're right. I guess the question is, should an independent advisory panel, A, be public facing, as you said, and B, should it ever be running counter to what the regulator, Health Canada, is saying? I think that's an honest question moving forward in terms of how what this looks like. But yeah, NACI gives recommendations about all kinds of vaccines, diphtheria, like anything, any kind of vaccine that you could think of. They have recommendations around the use of it. And it's not something that we normally, I think I mentioned this in another episode, like, I didn't know it existed before. I assumed someone was doing something to make me safe somewhere. I just didn't know what they were called and how it worked. And now that I do, I have to wonder whether this is the best way to communicate information to people at a critical time when we want people, as we get more and more vaccine into the country, where we want people to be going out and getting vaccinated. However, and again, we'll bring up our dear Emma here as another pushback. Is there not some benefit to you as a person deciding what your own risk factor and risk comfort is in taking a vaccine? So you get all this information, you look at it, you read it, you listen, you talk to your doctor, you talk to your friends, you talk to whomever you trust. And then you yourself make a personal decision about what you are comfortable with in terms of your life and risk, because all parts of life have risk. All parts of medication have risks. And maybe there's something to being able to make that decision yourself with all that information out there. I don't know what you think of that idea.
I mean, I certainly would like to be empowered with the best possible available information,
right.
But I think there's something to the idea that there's sort of confusion in the signals, because I'm listening to NACI say, well, there is a preferred vaccine, and I'm listening to the Prime Minister say, the best vaccine is the first one available to you. Well, what am I supposed to do with that information? Because if the Prime Minister, who, by the way, did get the AstraZeneca vaccine himself, if the Prime Minister is saying that these vaccines are safe, then, like, should the message at this point in the pandemic, when we need as many people as possible to get vaccinated, should the message be this complicated? And to that end, Canada's chief public health officer did have these comments about this whole NACI fiasco. Here's what she said.
I can certainly understand why some individuals are, you know, concerned or getting frustrated as advice appears to be evolving. But that is the nature of science and advice. And I think that Health Canada, as the Prime Minister said, is doing their job. The National Advisory Committee on Immunization is also doing their job. But I think the bottom line is that everyone should be reassured that the regulator, the experts, and local medical officers of health have all done their work in a synchronized manner to provide the vaccines to the communities, so that you should trust that the vaccine program being offered to you is done with that best knowledge, and that information should be provided to everyone to make sure you get the best informed decisions.
Now, that is, you know, crisis management communication, if I've ever seen one, after the panic that was caused by the NACI comments. But having said that, like, there is something to this idea of, like, okay, NACI's just doing its job, but the people you should be listening to are the regulators who are telling you that these vaccines are safe. Does that calm the minds of people who are confused? I don't know.
Hey, my name's Jamie Poisson, and I'm the host of Front Burner. It's the CBC's daily news podcast. And every day, we're discussing the big events and fault lines shaping Canada and the world. Politics, economics, social movements, you name it. Sometimes we even talk about really fun stuff, like the enduring relevance of Lord of the Rings. You can hear Front Burner on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about Ontario, not because we are Ontario-centric, but because it has been such a terrible situation in this province in terms of the pandemic and how it's managed.
We didn't want to talk about Ontario. We just had to.
It kept on being a trash fire. Yeah. And the numbers are actually moving. They're tracking now in the right direction in Ontario, slowly but surely. So it does show that lockdowns and restrictions work. But there is another province now that is equally in a terrible, hellish state in terms of the pandemic. Alberta reported its highest total number of active cases just on Tuesday of this week. The positivity rate in that province is 12%. This week it actually got over that. It got up to 13% on Monday. It is now, in terms of per capita cases, the worst in the country, more than twice the rate of what we are seeing in Ontario. And it comes after really weeks of doctors watching things unfold in Alberta and calling on the premier and the government to do more. And finally, that happened this week. It happened on Tuesday night when Jason Kenney announced more restrictions that start sort of over the course of the next number of days. Things like K-12 students now will all move to online learning. Retail is limited to 10%, which I have thoughts about, but I'll save those for a minute. Outdoor gatherings are limited to five people. Hair salons, tanning salons, nail salons, they're all closed. And perhaps important here, and I know we'll talk about compliance, the fine for violating these rules is doubling from $1,000 to $2,000. This also comes on a day when Alberta has just announced that every Albertan over 12 will be eligible to get their vaccine starting this coming Monday. This is because Pfizer has now been approved for kids age 12 to 15, not just 16. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to get a handle on things, but I think a lot of people wonder whether it's too late, and also whether the premier sort of understands what is in front of him in terms of trying to get people to follow these rules.
I have to say that when I saw the new list of restrictions, and it said that restaurants will be closed for indoor dining, and now patios are also going to be closed, I thought, you had patios this whole time?
I know, me too.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, it is puzzling to me that Alberta is just now arriving at restrictions that have been in place in the country, and like in the rest of the country, for most of the pandemic. And I should not say that it's puzzling to me, because that's actually not true. It's been the result of Jason Kenney making choices. Jason Kenney has consistently made choices that did not just opt for the smallest amount of restrictions, he bragged about it. He consistently bragged about the fact that Alberta is the most open province, the province that is least restrictive. He's consistently bragged about the fact that in Alberta, they prioritize freedom. Well, we are now at a place where that brag does not get you much except for the title of the province that is most hit by COVID. And so he has spent months and months and months building a culture in Alberta, particularly among his backers, of people who are against restrictions. And it is not a surprise that now he has to pull back and say, we have to restrict because Alberta's hospital capacity is, you know, facing genuine danger at this point. People are not listening to that because he's kind of led the fight for the other direction.
He gave a nod to some of the things you're talking about when he made this announcement in an address on Tuesday evening, sort of the difficulty in balancing these things. Here's what he said.
Governments must not impair people's rights or their livelihoods unless it is absolutely necessary to save lives and, in this case, to prevent disaster from unfolding in our hospitals. Unfortunately, that is the situation that we are facing today.
You know, I get that people feel strongly that, and perhaps more strongly in Alberta, that they do not want governments telling them what to do and how to live. I understand that. I understand that's part of the reason Jason Kenney was such an attractive option to many people in Alberta. But I think what the premier didn't recognize this week, has not recognized or understood, is again this issue of compliance. It's one thing to not have restrictions, which they didn't have, and now they do. It's another thing to get people to buy into why you're putting the restrictions in place and have them comply. And when part of your own caucus is vocally against the restrictions and you are comfortable with them being openly debating the restrictions, when there are protests around the province on a regular basis, including a big rodeo last weekend that nobody enforced or nobody tried to shut down in any way. When there are, I spoke to the mayor of Lethbridge on my show on Sunday, when there are people protesting outside of hospitals about restrictions, I think you have to acknowledge that it's not just a problem of compliance. It's a problem of getting people to believe that things are necessary, like believe that what the restrictions that are going into place are to keep you and other people safe. And that's the part that I think is broken in Alberta right now. And I'm not sure that heavier fines and more restrictions are going to be able to overcome the many people who fundamentally disagree with the restrictions and who Jason Kenney has not spoken to or not brought along because he himself and parts of his caucus have allowed that conversation to flourish.
That's exactly it, right? Like, he's been the figure that these people have turned to, right, who say that they don't want restrictions, because he has publicly supported them for the longest time. And so you've now built a political culture, you've sown a sort of environment where these restrictions are, you know, in some kind of capacity, the political enemy, some kind of theoretical political enemy. So for him to kind of come back around and say, now it's time for restrictions, he seems to no longer have the credibility that space, because he spent so long railing against them. But B, and I guess like maybe this is the larger point, the idea that Alberta is somehow exceptional in its, like, I don't know, dislike of restrictions and its love of freedom is, I think, something that just, like, at the end of the day didn't check out. Like, it's not like the rest of the provinces are sitting here being like, we love these restrictions. Please restrict me. Restrict all of our freedoms and close down these businesses. Nobody's saying that, but it's like you survey the rest of the country and you see what they have to go through and you think that somehow this will not happen to you. Alberta managed to avoid the worst in the first wave. That was not the case for the second wave, but it seems like no lessons were learned then. And this is kind of the situation we find ourselves in now when Alberta's facing this massive, massive third wave.
And there, to be clear, there are protests in other provinces. There was one last weekend, a large one in Montreal. There was a smaller protest in my hometown of Winnipeg. It's not that other provinces don't have people against the restrictions. It's that other provinces don't have premiers hesitating to put the restrictions into place. That's the sound of friends that I know in places that are not here, like the United States or the United Kingdom, like really primarily those two countries that are far ahead of us in terms of vaccines. And they're having beer. And I see the pictures, Elamine, of like people in London, and it sort of makes me weep a bit to think.
Is it breaking your heart? It's breaking my heart. I can't handle it.
But it's also like, wow, maybe this will be over one day.
I do. Hopefully.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, on that emotional note, it's also the sound of last call. And this week we wanted to ask you, in light of our conversation around vaccines, have you found the messaging around vaccines as clear as you would like it to be, as you need it to be? You can tweet us. I'm at Rosie Barton.
And I'm at Elamine88. Throw in the hashtag. The hashtag is Party Lines, and let us know what you think.
And that is it for Party Lines this week from CBC News and CBC Podcasts. I'm Rosemary Barton, chief political correspondent for CBC News. I'm flourishing. I'm flourishing. No, I'm not. I'm languishing.
Hey, same. I'm Elamine Abdul-Mahmoud. I'm chief languishing officer and culture writer for BuzzFeed News. You know. We're getting through it.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.